locally and beyond. Information online at their Main Street storefront in Narrowsburg or their office in the Narrowsburg Union. DamascusCitizens.org.
Did you know that we didn't even have an election night until 1848? In the early days, the media would let people know who was winning any way they could.
Sometimes they would have a light on top of a building, you know, and codes published in advance shine one way or the other, and people know who's winning.
Plus, the uncommitted movement makes hard decisions. On this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
On last week's Wait, Wait, Dulce Sloan was impressed that the insane clown posse had endorsed Kamala Harris.
Because, like, you know, things are getting crazy when Shaggy Two Dope is out here calling for a saner clown posse.
I'm Peter Sagal. If you're worn out by election news, we'll wear you out with news about everything else, along with special guest Brian Jordan Alvarez on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Gem Screen Printing and Embroidery in Milford, Pennsylvania. Family-owned business offering decorated apparel, promotional items, signs, banners, and more since 2016. More information at gemspe.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Catskill Character. I'm your host, Donna Fellenberg. Today, I'll be speaking once again with Coshecta, New York resident Sasha Graham. The last time we spoke, Sasha was sending her daughter, Jack, off to college, now a senior. We'll revisit that discussion and add to it the joys of going through perimenopause, Sasha's return to acting in horror films, and, as only she can do, Sasha will give us her positive spin on growing older. Let's get to it. Sasha, welcome back.
I'm so excited to be here, Donna.
Well, I love having you on the show. You know, this is your third time on my show. I think you've been on more than anyone else because your life always seems to be filled with such a variety of things going on. And you have so much information to share with the listener.
Well, thank you. You know, coming on your show is more like sitting and enjoying a cup of coffee with you. It's easy to forget that we're recording this.
Well, the last time we spoke, you were sending your daughter, Jack, off to college, and we were commiserating, you know, about the pain of separation and also knowing that it will never be the same again.
Yeah, that was a really poignant time. And I remember being so struck by the complexity of my emotions. We were so proud to, you know, be sending her off to school, and sort of like our lifelong goal as parents had been achieved. And I hadn't counted on the heartbreak on my end, that I could be so proud and thrilled and excited, and also that my heart would be so ripped apart because she wasn't home with me anymore.
I know the feeling. And I remember when I went to college, I couldn't wait to get my parents out of the dorm. And when I sent Miles off, I had so much compassion for my mother because I finally understood when I looked at her when she was going down the stairs and her eyes were filled with tears. I finally got it.
Yes.
But, yeah. So speaking of Jack, your beautiful daughter, I know she was involved with a wilderness first responder training this summer. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about her first responder training. So for many, many years, she went to Frost Valley Summer Camp, which is a YMCA camp right in our backyard in Claryville, New York. So she had been a camper and had been on adventure trips for many summers. And she went back this past summer and worked as an adventure counselor. And one of the wonderful fringe benefits for being an adventure counselor is that they offered the option for anyone who was working as a counselor to get a week of wilderness first responder training. So that meant that she actually is now able to, in any emergency situation, take down information for a person who's in any sort of medical trauma and hand that information over to the ambulance people that would come and rescue them. She got a lot of medical training. It was really phenomenal.
That's fantastic. Also, it's fantastic for you if, God forbid, anything ever happens to you and she's there. Johnny on the spot. She'll know exactly what to do.
Her first responder training actually came in handy this past fall at college when one of her friends started having extreme abdomen pain and needed to be brought to the hospital. Jack was able to assess the situation and get her to the ER so quickly with all of the information that they needed to help her. So yeah, it's an invaluable tool.
Yeah. So obviously Jack is doing great. But what we didn't talk about last time was that on top of the grief of separation with Jack, you were also going, unbeknownst to you, through perimenopause.
Yes. And, you know, what was so fascinating about it in retrospect. So, you know, Jack was going off to college and we were doing college right in the pandemic time. So, and I think that I like to talk about perimenopause and menopause because it's something that I feel like women have a hard time identifying.
Yes.
Because it comes on so slowly and in so many different ways. So I thought I was having, you know, I had caught COVID. I thought I was having COVID symptoms. I was depressed because it was the pandemic. I was heartbroken when she went off to college. So all of the anxiety that I was feeling, my trouble sleeping, this literal brain fog that made it very hard for me to concentrate. You know, I would attribute the brain fog to, oh, I'm on too much social media, that I'm just having a hard time focusing because of that. The anxiety is because my daughter is leaving. My inability to sleep is because I'm stressed out. I attributed all of those things to everything else but what it actually was, which was perimenopause. By the time I was in actual menopause, by the time I sought help from my OBGYN, because these amazing women that I knew were talking about how they were on hormone replacement therapy, how they were taking estrogen and progesterone and testosterone. By the time I literally limped into my OBGYN and she looked at me and said, honey, there is no reason for you to suffer and we will get you what you need. And tonight you will have a good night's sleep. It wasn't a sleeping pill. It was progesterone that I needed. And by going on the lowest possible dose of all of those things, I've righted my ship and I feel human again.
Oh my God, what a relief.
Oh, I can't tell you. I can't tell you.
You don't have to tell me because I've been there, done that. And, you know, you're right. It does sort of creep up on you. And if you are used to sleeping well, and then suddenly, or not so suddenly, but slowly but surely, you're sleeping less and less until with me, I don't know how it was with you, I couldn't get to sleep at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. And I didn't even know what perimenopause was. I knew what menopause was, but I didn't even know, like so many women, that there was such a thing.
It's given me such compassion for women. It's given me such compassion for, like you said, Donna, that for people who didn't even know what it was, what they were going through. And literally anybody listening to this who understands what we're talking about, you know, it's even worse than trying to sleep as a new mom. I mean, we're talking about your brain health literally being shattered because you're not able to get into that dark REM sleep, that your brain is not able to repair itself. So not only is it torturous and can rip your life apart, and any husband of a perimenopause or menopausal woman will also know what we're talking about.
True.
Because they're living with it. A husband or partner, I should say, will understand what that is. But it also is detrimental to our health.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad that there are more resources now. I'm so happy people are talking about it. This isn't how I wanted to go into menopause. I thought I was going to white knuckle it and just be like turned back into the cool kid that I was back before my hormones rushed in. But that's not how it wound up. And I guess that's part of the gift of getting older. It teaches you to be open.
Thank you so much for that, Sasha. I'm sure there's a couple of listeners out there who go, oh, that's what's wrong with me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will also say, you know, hormone replacement therapy, depending on where you live and who your doctor is, some doctors are really excited about it. Other doctors are still kind of stuck in the dark ages, focused on this report, I think that came out in the 90s that said that HRT could be dangerous for people.
Yes.
So get out, do the research for yourself, and then make the decisions. You know, don't let one no end your HRT journey.
Well, the listener may remember, getting on a different topic here, that you had quite a career in the 90s as an actress in horror films, which you left when you became a mom and when you got deeply into tarot. But does the listener remember that October 31st is your birthday? So I want to wish you a happy birthday and say how fitting it is that your birthday is on Halloween. You, the screen queen of these horror movies in the 90s.
I love it. I love being a Halloween baby. I feel as if it has informed my entire life. And I think I honestly, even if it wasn't my birthday, Halloween is just the most magical, exciting, mysterious, fun night of the year. So I'm just so grateful. I'm so grateful to be a Halloween baby.
Did you ever have any thoughts of returning to your acting career while Jack was growing up?
No, when Jack was young, it hadn't really crossed my mind until I would say, I don't know, 2015 or 2016, she was getting older. I was traveling a lot and teaching tarot around the world. And something started nudging me. I thought, wouldn't it be fun to go make a horror movie again? And wouldn't you know it, my phone started ringing.
And we're going to talk about that in the second half of the show. But I just wanted to ask you, what happened to all of those movies that you made back in the 90s? What's going on with them?
So I was part of the independent film scene in New York City and the East Coast, of this very small segment of filmmakers who were shooting full-blown horror movies on camcorders, like low budget alternative movies, literally shot on video. So it's referred to as 90s SOV, shot on video. What was unique about this particular period of time is that these movies wound up in Blockbuster. So if you look back and remember what was going on in the 90s and early 2000s, like most of us, you know, would do our weekly Blockbuster visit to pick out our movies for movie nights. What was phenomenal were these independent vampire and alien and horror flicks that I was doing was winding up on the shelves of Blockbusters around the country, right next to big budget films. So for horror collectors who, you know, certain horror collectors, it's a very rare kind of movie ephemera from the mid to late 90s. Yeah.
Unbelievable. You never know, right? You just never know.
Donna, if you told me that these movies would still be kicking around, I would not have believed you.
Okay, Sasha, let's just take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about those movies. You've been listening to Catskill Character on Radio Catskill with today's guest, mother, actress, and author of many books and tarot kits, Sasha Graham. I'm Donna Fellenberg. This is Catskill Character. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week on our show, we dig into what it means to cook by feel and how you can learn to ditch recipes and just wing it. We talk with Vivian Howard, star of A Chef's Life, and scientist-turned-cook Nick Sharma. That's coming up on The Splendid Table.
The Splendid Table, Sunday morning at 11, on Radio Catskill.
next time on the Waggle of the Monkeys with me, Graham Ricey, on Radio Catskill. Our series featuring covers of songs from American songwriters brings us to the songs of Tom Waits. And believe me, these are a real treat. So join me, please, for folky covers of Tom Waits songs on Sunday afternoon at 3.
Welcome back to Catskill Character. If you've just joined us, I've been speaking with Sasha Graham of Coshecton, New York. Sasha and I added to our 2021 conversation around the grief lots of mothers go through when sending their children off to college. Sasha spoke about her experience going through perimenopause, and she shared valuable information with the listener regarding that. Sasha also spoke about the horror films she starred in back in the 90s, which have become cult classics. And we're about to take a deep dive into horror films, the blood and guts of it all. Sasha, let's talk about what's been going on since you were rediscovered and get into the actual making of horror films and what may be the same or different in 2024 versus the 90s.
I think that horror movies are one of the most streamed, attended, watched, and coveted genre of movies these days. So what wound up happening in the last, I would say, 5 years, these filmmakers that I had worked for and a generation of young filmmakers that were inspired by the 90s SOV independent cinema are now making movies again or making their own movies. And so in a fortuitous turn of events, I've been invited back into making movies. Big, bold, ridiculous, over-the-top horror films, which I love. I love, love, love. So I think I've done maybe 6 or 7 new movies in the last 5 years. Acting is so much fun. A lot of the times because it's so over the top, especially when we're talking about the special effects.
You made a film in 1995 called Addicted to Murder. There was a cadaver scene in that film that I'd like to talk about. And also, if you could tell us, how do they make the blood?
Addicted to Murder was a vampire film, which, of course, mid-90s, Anne Rice is all the rage, right? So yeah. For vampire movies and for, I was actually doing live vampire theater at the time too, in and around the tri-state area. There's obviously a lot of blood involved. And back then, they would make the blood by mixing red dye into corn syrup, because corn syrup has that kind of globular but runny consistency that looks a lot like human blood, which looked fantastic and bloody, but it tasted disgustingly sweet. You can imagine taking a big mouthful of corn syrup into your mouth and then kind of letting it run down your cheeks as you're feasting on someone's neck or some other body part. But Addicted to Murder had this one quite gory scene where my character, Angie the Vampire, was feeding with her lover on a cadaver, and the cadaver with the bottom half of the human from the belly button down had been torn away. So the camera pulls out and there's this half body cadaver with guts and blood spilling all out. My character's actually eating the flesh of this dead, rotting body. So gross. So in addition to being covered with the sweet blood corn syrup, the director had ordered out and gotten Chinese food for lunch. Specifically, he had ordered chicken with broccoli so he could take the chicken and place it on the cadaver and cover it in the corn syrup. And I was feasting on this like chicken. Oh. The whole room smelled like garlic chicken and sweet corn syrup, and the windows were closed and the hot lights were on. It was like We were baking in this disgusting feast of sugar and blood and plastic and chicken. It was pretty gross.
Sasha, what you do for your art?
Well, it beats your random Tuesday afternoon doing anything else, true, I have to say.
What about the movie that was released recently where you play a deranged game show host? You told me you had like a rough landing with that one.
Yeah, I worked on this phenomenal, crazy movie called Trivial. And I play a game show host who essentially tortures and ultimately kills the contestants that come onto my internet game show. And so by the end of that film, I had tortured and killed, I think, 7 or 8 men, which on one hand was highly cathartic. But on the other hand, when I stepped off my plane, we shot out in Ohio. When I got home, I lost my voice for 3 weeks. I was sick and in bed. I couldn't move. And in talking to other actor friends of mine, really began to understand that I knew the movie was pretend and that the kill scenes and the torture scenes were all in good fun. I think at a certain point, like the intelligence of my body felt like what was happening was real. I needed a long time to heal from the trauma of making that movie and from committing all of that violence, not only onto my victims in the film, but also to a certain extent to myself, because it's not normal to do those things to another human being. Oftentimes doing horror, and I experienced this in the 90s, doing scenes with guns and execution, you know, fake executions and dying often. It's hard for the body to take, you know, it takes its toll. So you have to be careful and just, I've learned to give myself a lot of leeway in and around even the things that are pretend and heightened reality. To a certain degree, your body's moving through it as if it's real, you know?
Mm, the body knows.
The body knows, you know, and it has its very own unique intelligence. And even in all of the ways, Donna, that a person can protect themselves or try to put up boundaries or hold space. And I mean, anybody in an intimate relationship understands, right? Mm. Like, how tough it can be to navigate what's happening for the other person as opposed to what's happening for you. And I suppose to a certain degree, a person can't completely protect themselves from it. And maybe why would we want to? Maybe that is what makes humans empathetic. So I think anyone knowing that and understanding that about themselves, I mean, and that includes, you know, what we ingest in terms of media and entertainment, where we place our attention and what we focus on, it affects us. It affects our physical body. It's inside of ourselves and it affects our psyche. So it's just something I think that's interesting and complex and great to be aware of, especially when trying to navigate the world.
Yeah. So given all of that, why do you think that horror films are so popular?
Well, I think that horror has a huge surge in popularity for many reasons. But I think the number one reason is that we live in a more distracted time than ever before. There are so many options, so much going on, right? All the updates constantly happening. Horror, because it's so extreme, because it's spooky, it is the one area where I think people find it easy to pay attention. And I'll harken back to a friend of mine. She's, I think, in her late 70s. And she says, you know, it's crazy, Sash, but horror is really the only kind of movies that I can watch anymore. It's the only thing that interests me. I think that it's because horror, like Greek and Roman tragedy, right? Like the very beginnings of theatrics, the stakes are so high that people find it easy not to be distracted. They can give their attention to it. It's almost like you can't look away, right? You can't look away. So I think that that is a big reason that horror is so popular right now.
I wanted to ask you if you're still doing Ghost Stories by the Fire. I think the listener would love to hear about that.
I am indeed still doing Ghost Stories by the Fire. So Ghost Stories by the Fire is a live event that I created. It's a live story sharing, kind of like a spooky moth, where I invite people in the audience to get up and share spooky stories. So I have a live component to that. In fact, I'm going to be up in Kingston, Ontario, doing a live Ghost Stories by the Fire in 2 weeks. But I also have a podcast version. So the first season of my Ghost Stories by the Fire podcast is available on all streaming platforms. And a season two, a rebooted season two, is going to be hitting the air probably by early next year, so January of 2025.
Before we go, I just thought it would be great if you could share with the listeners some of your interesting thoughts about growing older that I certainly would like to adopt.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for asking that question. Well, we don't really have any choice if we're lucky enough to be alive. Right now, I'm in my almost mid-50s. I'll be 54. First of all, a lot of the tarot work that I do is based in shadow work, right? Which is about using the tarot to kind of uncover your repetitive patterns, because it's my deep belief that just like the universe is expanding, so we are meant to expand and to grow. And so I think that growing older offers us this incredible opportunity to move into the spaces and places that we haven't been in the past. And that's one of the gifts of menopause, right? Or perimenopause. It's the gift of our children leaving. As hard as it is, suddenly we have all of this free space and then are lucky enough to put what we want to do, what maybe we haven't done yet, into that space. One of the challenges of growing older, of course, is losing the people that are closest to us. And that's kind of the agony and the price we pay for being alive, is being in a world that maybe doesn't contain those people who are closest to us, and knowing that our eventual end is not so far away. But with that space that a person leaves when they depart this world, we're given this kind of potent energy that they used to inhabit, that I think that through the process of grief, kind of take up some of that space for ourselves, stepping into the world in their memory, taking the best parts of who they are. Getting older offers us all of these tremendous pockets of pleasure and opportunity. The other thing too, I think about getting older, is life is not as complicated as it used to be. What satisfies not only myself, but a lot of older people that I know, including my husband, life is beautiful when you're sitting in a beautiful space, having a beautiful meal. You know, we were out of our heads, right? In our 20s, life was so complicated. A lot of that settles down, you know, if we're fortunate enough to be in a stable place. And with that, and also, you know, hearkening back to the pleasure of menopause, you're not taking care of people like you used to. So then you can choose to take that attention and energy and awareness and really put it towards anything that your heart desires. So it really is truly a reboot, certainly a really powerful one. I love it.
That's how I'm going to think about it, as a reboot, a really fantastic reboot. And as always, it's beyond a treat for me to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, such a pleasure. And thank you so much for having me on, Donna.
You've been listening to Catskill Character on WJFF Radio Catskill. On the show today was Sasha Graham. Sasha is on Facebook, Sasha Graham 1, her website, sashagraham.com, or on Insta, Sasha Tarot Diva. Catskill Character is on every Saturday at 10:30. I'm Donna Fellenberg. Thanks so much for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
How to turn a democracy into a dictatorship? Step one, plant a big lie and help it take off.
The key false narrative this election season, perhaps the key false narrative, despite a lack of evidence, is that there is a risk that non-citizens could vote in large numbers.
I'm Kai Wright. Join me live on the next Notes from America. We'll talk about how all the extreme rhetoric and lies you hear now set the stage for what comes next, no matter who wins. Sunday evening at 6, live on Radio Catskill.
We are in the final stretch of this historic election season. Former President Trump and Vice President Harris are making their last big push before it all comes to a head on November 5th. I'm Scott Detrow. Join us for live special coverage of Election Night 2024 from NPR News. We will bring you the latest as the polls close and the vote totals roll in, with the context and analysis you need to stay informed.
NPR's Election Night coverage starts at 7 Tuesday with local and regional updates throughout the night, only from Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville,
This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.